2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, I am joined by Fantasy Baseball World Champion, Master of the Robo Scout, amongst other things, our lead fantasy analyst, Dylan White. How's it going, man? I'm going to make you wear that all offseason. World champion, Dylan.
Best fantasy player in the world.
yes.
Don't deserve that. It's good. It's good. The everyone's kind of healed up from the virus that had ravaged through my family the last couple of weeks. And I'm starting to get back up to speed and watching baseball playoffs.
It's a good combination. Invigorating. Getting everybody on the mend and, you know, of course, also doing your thing in terms of the fantasy baseball world. So I wanted to get into a couple of things this week. I don't think we really have any, like, deep fantasy analysis to get into necessarily because there's been no games since the last time we talked and there were no games at that point. So it's been quite a while and there won't be any games coming in for quite a bit other than the Arizona Fall League. We can talk about that in a couple of weeks once we've had a little bit more meat in the bone there. It's only been a week or so. So let's some things kind of brew and stew before we dig in on sample sizes there. It's also the desert, and I think you would agree that it is a positive run environment for hitters and not necessarily for pitchers. And there's a variety of factors there beyond just the weather and the parks and all that sort of thing. But the ball does fly out there in Arizona, that's for sure. I wanted to talk about really more like our processes in terms of evaluating players in the offseason, and in particular using numbers and, you know, statistics and data and, you know, all the different tools that we happen to have available to us. But a lot of this stuff, I think, if you look in the right places, is available publicly too. So Dylan, I wanted to sort of put you on the hot seat here a little bit, I guess, but you knew what was coming up. In terms of how you sort of start your off-season process, whether that is evaluating major league players or prospects for Dynasty Baseball. And I don't know if the two necessarily differ for you. And if there is, I'm sure there is, some crossover in terms of the processes and the types of things that you do look at.
Yeah, huge question. Over the years, in the off seasons, I like to play with the spreadsheets to see how, like, projections before the season, how they came out after the season. I like to see if there are things that are predictive, say first half versus second half, what's correlated. I use like Excel a lot. When I first started out, I just use Excel a lot using the like multiple regression and correlation feature in the data analysis pack, just to see, okay, what stats are correlated to like fantasy dollar value earned from like the Fangraphs auction calculator or like the Razzball player rater at the end of the year. And I saw that the best correlated metric next to plate appearances is OPS. So just by having OPS and having the top OPS guys, you can find pretty much a very good correlation. It was something like 0.7 or something like that to fantasy dollars earned. And I think a lot of that's obviously sort of self-reinforcing. If you're have a high OPS, you're going to get playing time by your manager. And so if you get playing time, you're going to start getting runs and RBIs. And so it's kind of like a self-reinforcing loop. But I found that to be very interesting. And so what I would do then is I'd say, okay, what predicts OPS? What metrics are actually correlated to OPS? And, you know, you play with it and it's like, oh, you know, walks are correlated to OPS because walks obviously give you OBP, OBP is part of OPS, et cetera, et cetera. And so I start doing that. And then like, what kind of correlates to those things? Is there a thing that predicts walks? And so, like, you saw there's some work that, like, Jeff Zimmerman's done. Rob DiPietro's been talking about it a lot. Like, ball percentage for pitchers, for example, is highly correlated to walk rate, better than walk rate is. Like, BB9 or BB percentage is better actually correlated. Ball percentage is actually a more predictive than walk percentage, basically, of the future walks, which is interesting. So I just find things like that. And so I've set up all these spreadsheets that are like kind of self-running now during the season for fantasy, where I just like download all these like leaderboards from Fangraphs, and I just plug them into my thing, and it already does the calculation of like expected OPS or expected walk rate or expected etc. Kind of blends it in with like projections as well, to get kind of that wisdoms of the crowd action going, where I blend a bunch of things to predict OPS, and I just kind of spits out a number. I'm kind of getting into the weeds here, but that sort of approach is kind of what I've been doing for all things. So minor leaguers, what seems to predict, you know, OPS in the minor leagues? How does age affect OPS, future OPS? How does the level affect future OPS? How do you predict walk rates, strikeout rates, batting average, things like that? And that's kind of how RoboScout was born. We're finding like what the correlations are for predicting future metrics. I can go into more details about that, but that's sort of like the hitter approach that we do. I like people to be sort of teach a man to fish type of thing. So it's like kind of explaining the process, and they can find their own things. Like I didn't know about ball percentage until, you know, this year. I was always using walk percentage or BB9 as my predictor. And now, you know, there's a thing to constantly refine sort of the process of how to use metrics to, you know, predict performance.
Over 60% of Americans believe that the most useful second language in the U.S. is Spanish. In my scientific survey of people in baseball, I would put that number at somewhere around 99%. Spanish is spoken in every clubhouse in the U.S. at the minor and major league level. And if you want to take some time this fall to brush up on what you didn't learn in high school, no problemo, because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. You can start speaking a new language with Babbel. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are a little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you speak a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations. All of Babbel's tips and tools for learning a new language are approachable, accessible, and rooted in real-life situations. They delivered with conversation-based teaching. Here's what I love about Babbel. It isn't learning from a book. It presents different ways for you to cover the same material so you learn. You hear the words. You read the words. You speak the words. And then Babbel tells you if you're speaking them properly. And it all begins to click. Comprende? Studies from Yale, Michigan State, and others prove that Babbel is better. For instance, one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester of college. With over 10 million subscriptions sold, Babbel's real language learning for real conversations. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for Baseball America listeners. Go to babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off of a Babbel subscription, babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions apply.
Looking for tickets to your next game, concert, or show? Make shopping for tickets more convenient with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com or install TickPick on the App Store and use promo code ZIP20, that's ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant product goods and service restrictions apply. Visit Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app were originated through WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland. Check out with Zip at tickpick.com.
Yeah, and I think as you find better numbers too, it tends to, you know, tighten your process and the results that you get and your confidence in it, right? You know, and I obviously don't have the machine learning background or ability, I guess, that you do, but certainly play around with a lot of numbers. And, you know, this is all sort of absent of any scouting notes that I get or any notes that I take myself or the things that I see, because I probably weigh what I personally see the lowest of all the different factors when it comes to like what my actual process is. It's really like, and I've had people kind of say this, and it's crude to put it this way, but a lot of in-person scouting, Dylan, I feel, is like just the bus test. Like, what do they look like when they get off the bus? Like, what does the body look like? How do they move? You know, like that sort of stuff, which is helpful. It certainly is helpful. And, you know, I think there are certain traits that are probably predictive, but it's difficult to measure those traits, you know, in terms of like a three-dimensional like way, right? Like, I think that's kind of what the difficulty is, like whether you're looking at like bat speed or some of these different things. As I get into the process and I'm looking at numbers, the first thing that I do typically, and we have access to Synergy, which is obviously not necessarily public, and this is something that I'm sure you can do to an extent with minor leaguers. You can definitely do this with major leaguers. Whether it's a pitcher or a hitter, I really like to dig in from the split perspective of what the hitter's approach is like and what their strengths and weaknesses are like against left-handers and against right-handers. And whether that's a pitcher or a hitter, you can obviously do this. And I try to isolate, like when I'm looking at Synergy, I try to isolate each individual pitch by handedness. So I'm looking at what the fastball is like or what the results are like against left-handed fastballs for a hitter. And then I'm going down, I'm looking at different breaking pitches. And then I'm kind of toggling back and forth between left-handed and right-handers, right? And that gives me a pretty good idea of like how a hitter approaches it. So like, here's an interesting one that like came from doing some background work. I'd watched Victor Scott in spring training. I had seen Victor Scott in college. I saw him in the Cape. So I had a good scouting history with him. And I was aware of the numbers. He was somebody that I had written about a lot this year. But as I dug into the numbers, I didn't realize when he's facing right-handed pitching, because he's a left-handed hitter, when he's facing right-handed pitching, he's a much more standard hitter. All 8 of his home runs came against right-handers. And, you know, he slugs a little bit against right-handers. He hits for contact. He's a very good contact hitter. That's never not part of his game. But what I noticed was he had 28 bunts this season, Dylan, and 24 of those were against left-handers. So as I dug into the numbers, I started to realize that Scott used his speed in the left-hander's batter's box and his bunting ability to his advantage in his approach against left-handers, because he doesn't really hit for power left on left, which is always a struggle for left-handed hitters, is hitting left-handed pitching, especially early on in their professional careers. And he really turned that and like walking and making contact going the other way into an art. So I watched all of his bunts on, because we have the ability to do this in Synergy. So I watched all the video of all 28 bunts, and he had a 708 batting average on bunts this year. Part of it is he's a 70 runner, maybe an 80 runner when you consider the base instincts. There was a time, and the most of the bunts were good. He really just wears out that like grassy area between like the first baseman and the pitcher that's just hard for everybody to converge on and kind of know who's going to get the ball. He hits that like on the head 2 out of 3 times, and he flies down the baseline. So like, it's bunting. It's weird. But it's something where I was like, I'm kind of confident that he's got a plan of attack against left-handers. And I wouldn't have known that had I not dug into the numbers. And it gives me a much like more holistic picture of the type of hitter or the type of pitcher somebody is. Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but like digging into a pitcher today, I'm looking at it, I'm like, you know, his fastball is good metrically. Good velocity. His pitch sits 94 to 95. It's got ride and a little bit of run. It was like a 17.8 profile, so 17 IVB, 8 HP. So pretty good. Flat vertical approach angle was like a 4.4, 4.5, Dylan. You know that I like that. And so I'm digging into all the numbers. And then I started to look at the performance against the pitch, and it wasn't very good. And so, like, we have performance data and synergy, and then we have some performance data that we get through our reporting and sources, etc. And I started to see, like, this guy doesn't really miss bats on this fastball. So it's probably not a 60. It's probably more like a 55 because of how it could play. And, like, yeah, he's had some injuries. And then I'm looking at the secondary pitches, and it's like he misses bats with his curveball, and his, you know, his slider is more of a chase pitch. And it's like, it's very clear by looking at, like, some of the different rates on the per pitches basis, what either hitters struggle with and what they hit well, and what pitchers struggle with and what, you know, what their plan of execution is, or maybe even things that you'll notice, like, hey, this guy should maybe not throw his fastball 50% of the time and should up curveball and slider usage because those pitches work. I think I kind of got in a tangent there, as I typically do, but what I'm trying to say is, like, I think by looking at isolating splits and, like, per pitch splits and really getting into the weeds of trying to isolate things, I always think helps in terms of understanding things that maybe you miss in the big picture. Cause I think we're so used to looking at the season long big picture metric, everything blended in with a variety of situations. And that gives us a really good understanding and a really good picture off the bat of, like, the type of hitter somebody is, where he's a contact guy who's kind of aggressive and chases, or he's a power guy who maybe misses in zone. But when he does make contact, obviously it goes a long way, and he walks a lot, doesn't chase. Like, there's all these different types of players and profiles, and it's the same thing with pitchers. And I think as you start to understand those profiles, then you can kind of put those guys in the right category of, like, all right, like, player A is, you know, in this three true outcome profile, and player B is in that profile, and player A is a better version of player B. And it kind of allows you to kind of understand rankings better. And it, once you understand all these players and you take your notes, what I personally do, and I don't know if other people do this, I make it real simple. On, like, a 1 to 5 scale, I'll rate a variety of skills. And when I'm done doing that, I kind of total everything up. And sometimes, like, you'll like a player more based on those numbers than, like, you visually did, or, like, what your instincts or, you know, pre-programmed kind of perception of a player is from, you know, all the stuff that's out there about these guys from the time they're, you know, amateur players until, you know, they're on the cusp of the major leagues. So, yeah, I think that breaking it down and isolating a lot of different things is valuable. But I think my direction often sort of comes from a lot of stuff and conversations that we've had over the last couple of years, even before we worked together, just in terms of seeing correlations between certain metrics and, you know, OPS or WRC plus, whatever it is that you want to do. You know, and I've even done some of that stuff on my own, like tried to run some correlations, et cetera. But I know that you've done it for a lot of the advanced metrics that we do look at. What are some that do correlate well with OPS or different stuff that you're looking at, or FIP or whatever it might be on the pitching side?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I like to do a lot is I find the things that are correlated to the key metrics and blend them. So strikeout rate, we all want strikeout rate. We all like strikeout rate for a hitter or a pitcher. Very important. But what's correlated to strikeout rate? And so, like, swinging strike rate for a pitcher, contact rate for a hitter. And so you can find a correlation that if someone has a contact rate of 70% or whatever, that implies that they should have a strikeout rate around whatever that number is, 22%. If they actually have a strikeout rate of 28%, then, you know, either that 28% is too high for whatever reason, maybe his approach isn't good on 2 strikes, maybe he's not changing his approach, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe it's overstating his strikeout rate, or maybe the contact rate's understating his real strikeout rate because, you know, maybe he's trying to just cut his swing down. He's just trying to make contact and he's actually not making any good contact, et cetera, et cetera. Point is, I blend the two. So you have a strikeout rate, you have like the expected strikeout rate that the contact rate is implying. And I'll do that for everything. How can you find a correlation to like the way I said with the ball percentage? So I have the walk percentage, I'll have the ball percentage, I'll blend them all. So I'm blending all these things to come up with like the overarching strikeout rate. Home run rate is related to barrel rate. And so like, what is the home run rate that's being implied by this barrel rate? And what's the home run rate implied by this exit velocity? And I blend to kind of hedge and diversify. So you're not kind of relying on one metric. You're kind of having a bunch of inputs to come up with the metric. So all that to say, when we have the Statcast data, you can get the implied home run rate from the exit velocities. You can get the implied strikeout rate from the contact rates and the in-zone contact rates. You can get walk rates and strikeout rates from the chase rates. You see these correlations that start popping up. And then you can also see what are the more important ones for the like OPS or WRC plus or WOBA, if that's the ultimate metric you're kind of looking at. You can see that like the contact quality is more important than contact for future WOBA or OPS. I wanted to actually go back to the thing about Victor Scott. I think that there's a lot in there that I want to talk about. What I like to do too, when you say about like slicing down and seeing splits and stuff, I look at my like RoboScout spreadsheet and I'll see some guys that draw my attention. And I like to form a conclusion just from the numbers of what I think that player is. And then I dig into it. So Victor Scott was one, was like, oh, who's this person who's like stealing all these bases? Let me like conjure up a picture of what I think that person is. And then I look and I see, oh, he's incredibly elite defensively in center field. So immediately I have him at one level and then now he's up another level because I know he's going to get the playing time. I know that he has, you know, more than one tool in his belt that he can rely on. If he goes in a slump as a hitter, he'll be able to still play because he's good defensively, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On the other side of the coin, maybe it's you find someone who's like just crushing the ball, like Moises Ballesteros, and has been crushing the ball. Then you look and watch some video and you see, okay, he's not the most athletic or he may not stick a catcher. And so then you kind of move the needle up or down. I like doing that. So it's similar to what you're saying with the pitchers. You see a pitcher that's dominating and like we look at the other, oh, he's a good stuff plus rating or whatever. And then we look into it. And it's like, oh, he's a changeup thrower in the complex. That's what it is. That's why he's, you know, having all this success. Or, oh, he's only throwing a fastball in the DSL and he throws it at 94 and everyone else is throwing it at 90. And that's what it is. It doesn't have a very good shape. It's just, he's just purely blowing it by them. So he may have problems in the future as he progresses or develops. So I guess basically it's kind of like a Bayesian approach to sound smarter than I am, where you have like this idea of what the player is. And then you adjust those priors up or down based on the new information, looking at video or seeing that he's good defensively or not good defensively, or he's, oh, this is a first base only profile. So I'm not that interested anymore because, you know, that all that power is actually not that good for a first baseman. But if he was a shortstop, then, you know, that's an elite tool that we're not used to seeing as a shortstop. So I like doing that kind of that layers. If you have the top level, what the data showing, and then it's like, what is supporting that? Or what is kind of taking away from that as you go diving deeper and deeper?
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, you know, it's something I do like after I sort of go through my process of looking at different numbers. Because after I break down splits, I will look at the underlying data and, you know, if it's a hitter, how hard does he hit the ball? You know, we have access to things like, you know, like ex-WOBA-con and ex-WOBA against each individual pitch and run values. And, you know, I'll typically kind of be toggling between, you know, within my spreadsheet, we have a couple of tabs. I have one where I'm looking at data and then the next one where we actually have the breakdown and it, which is something that you did, that sends the benchmarks for certain levels and certain ages. And so I'll kind of toggle back and forth and be like, all right, like, how does this compare? How does this rake out? Okay, like the performance maybe isn't like crazy on its face, but actually the performance was actually pretty good, or hey, like the numbers against this pitch were high. I saw this one with another pitcher today. The actual like performance numbers were bad. Like the pitch was hit pretty hard, but the expected numbers were pretty low. And it was like, all right, like you don't usually see that. And the discrepancy was pretty large. So it was like, all right, well, maybe like in the synergy sample, there's some pitches that are missing that were mismarked that performed really well, which could throw off the sample as well. You know, or it's just one of those things where you just had bad luck on like where balls fell when they went into play and who his outfielders were on the corners and stuff. I think that's especially with pitchers, right? And then what I'll do is because we have access to video, I can then go in and isolate a variety of hits, doubles, you know, et cetera, and then see how the ball was played or where it fell and then how it came off the bat and be like, oh yeah, that was totally misplayed by the right fielder, or, you know, the left fielder just straight up swiped at it and missed the ball or something, like, you know, so we don't necessarily see that. And I think the other thing nowadays, and this is a totally different aside, but by having the access to isolate video and look at things, it's good because the scoring nowadays in the minor leagues, they do not give many errors in comparison to what they used to. There's a lot of, you know, they say what they, some might say, you know, home team scoring. I think it goes both ways, frankly. There's a lot of hits that get scored, but not a lot of errors. So like just to be able to see that stuff and isolate it, I think is pretty valuable too. You know, looking at numbers is great of getting a baseline. And like I said, you can really kind of refine what a profile is like. You know, I think when you want to watch, you want to be able to dig in a little bit more. And it's one of the things that's kind of great about like Savant is you can isolate some of those plays, et cetera, and get a better understanding of like how something happened with a major leaguer. And that's when, you know, a publicly available tool like Synergy or something is really valuable when we're looking at minor leaguers, because it does allow us to isolate video and watch plays and understand like how it really did look. I know this sounds like a giant commercial for like all these different things right now, but it's not. I mean, it's just, it's truly what my process is. And, you know, I think, like I said, not everybody necessarily has like all the data or the data skills, but I think you can do a lot of this stuff if you start to dig in, look at like swing strike rates, and then, you know, go back and watch some games. I mean, you can go back and you can look at, this is something I used to do before I had access to any data, is I would go back and I would look at game logs for players on Fangraphs. And I would see like, hey, where did Isaac Paredes, who was maybe a prospect at the time, struck out three times. Like, all right, I'm going to go watch that game and skip ahead of those three strikeouts, those at bats. And you can find it on MILB. And even if you want to, you can actually, even better is the game logs and Baseball Reference, where you can go in, you can actually click on the game date and the MILB page for the game and the box score will come up. So you can actually look, if you look at plays, you can look at when the strikeout happened and isolate it. Then go to the game. If you have MILB still, go to the game. You can go back, you can watch the game, you can watch the at-bats and say, okay, like he missed on breaking balls. Maybe that gives you a little bit more of an understanding. In total, it doesn't take that much time. When you have the numbers in front of you and you kind of have a process refined, like I can kind of go through a report, I would say, in about an hour and really dig in and get all the information that I need and make my notes and kind of, you know, come to a conclusion about what a player's strengths or weaknesses are. And I think when you're talking about major leaguers, it's even easier because so much of it, data and information is available. And even with a lot of AAA hitters now, it's kind of the same thing. There's so much information available with AAA hitters, if you really wanted to dig in, that you could actually do a lot of the stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think a lot of it, I encourage anyone who is, you know, starting out on this journey of trying to go through data, go through and try to glean information, is sort of back test and like ask questions and then see if you can answer those questions yourself. So like one, for example, is it better as a starting pitcher to have three pitches that are 50s or two pitches that are 55s? And so, you know, you kind of, I would take, you know, Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard and I would download the things. I'd say, okay, find pitchers that have 350s by my definition of what a 50 is. Maybe whiffs compared to average, or, you know, ex-woba compared to average, or ex-wobacon compared to average. And then, okay, that's my pool of pitchers that have 350s. And then, okay, what's my player pool of pitchers that have 255s? And then I compare and see what their, you know, future outcomes were. And it's a blast if you like digging into the numbers. It's fun to just see it. You like when you find some sort of conclusion that seems actionable. It's exhilarating. Just in answer questions like that, it's like, oh, okay, so is there something that can predict whether someone's going to have a 50, or is whiffs the right metric, et cetera, et cetera. And just keep going down the rabbit hole of things that are interesting. And then you can find answers like that. Or like, hey, if a prospect has got bad splits, he can't hit lefties as a left-handed batter, how much will that impact his development or growth? Like, what's the bust rate then of players who have like a bigger than 500 OPS difference versus righties versus lefties? And then, you know, again, create a player pool and look how they've done in the future. Or comps, someone's hitting 30 home runs in AAA as a 24-year-old, is that good? And so download all the 24-year-olds at AAA who have hit 30 home runs and see, oh, there have been 40 of them, and, you know, only two of them made it to the major. So, you know, kind of gives you ideas of possible outcomes and probabilistic outcomes of that data pool that you find. So I encourage everyone to kind of play with it and ask questions and try to answer the questions yourself. We're always available on social media if anyone has questions on how to, like, go about something, what the process is, the method may be. And and happy exploring.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it too is obviously getting a good idea and baseline of what the averages are of the different metrics you're looking at. So you know what's good and what's bad, you know. I guess I kind of didn't mention that. Obviously, you know, you run the correlations, things like that, and you do run benchmarks. But I think just people at home too, just getting a good understanding of what that number is. And I always think you can sort of do that just simply by looking at leaderboards and digging around and, you know, getting a better idea of like how all that works together. Dylan, anything else before we wrap this up that you feel in terms of your basic process that we haven't discussed or an interesting angle?
No, I think that as a high level is the kind of the process to take, but I think also maybe just don't get complacent. Don't think that, you know, because, you know, barrels are predicting home runs at this, at this way, that that's going to always be the way, because if they switch the ball, or if, you know, the shift isn't allowed anymore, like things change. So you have to constantly refine and backtest, as I say, the correlations or the metrics that you find, like maybe fastballs that are flat are the rage right now, and they're the ones that are dominating and all that. But when everyone's starting to throw the flat fastballs, then, you know, maybe it's something else unique is the one that is going to be more productive and predictive of success. So it's like, it's a never-ending process. It's dynamic, which is part of the fun, that the cutting edge is always moving.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, let's wrap this up. Send everybody home. We'll be back with next week with some other conversation of some sort. I think we might have something in the works, but I'm going to keep that a secret. All of our listeners that made it to the end of the show, you can know that there's something good coming out very shortly. But thanks for tuning in.
Charlie. She loves dogs.
Guilty.
She powers her pup empire with Shopify.
The sales won't stop.
With Charlie's tech needs sorted, she can focus on turning her home business into a global operation. Yes, boy. Join Shopify, the commerce platform powering millions of businesses worldwide. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.co.uk/green. Go to shopify.co.uk/green to start selling online today.